Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this extra episode, for 26 years, Seattle's African American Writers Alliance has held a reading at the Elliott Bay Book Company on the last Saturday in February. The group's mission is to provide support for new and published authors, peer review, and creative opportunities for public readings. Their most recent gathering took place on February 24th. They shared poems, stories, and reflections from their new anthology, Voices That Matter. KUOW's Sonia Harris recorded the readings. Please note, this recording contains unedited language of an adult nature. Here, Lola E. Peters opens the event.
I want to send a special shout out, especially since we're being recorded for KUOW right now, to our leader, our intrepid leader and one of the founders of the African American Writers Alliance, Georgia McDade. Georgia, for the first time, is not here with us because she is not well, but she will be well. She's on the path to recovery, yay. But we miss her, so please give a hand for her. Many of you know her. She is a staple and stalwart in the Black community, in the community at large. So what we're going to do is we're going to just go down the line here and read for you. And I get to be the first person because, you know, I do. So I wrote three poems for the anthology. Not mine. Oh, really? That flower didn't birth itself, you know. Someone planted the seed, someone piled on fertilizer, someone watered it. Someone cleared the ground so roots could spread. Someone did nothing and let the weeds thrive. Oh, it's your flower, your plant. You let it grow. Ignore your racist uncle. Say nothing when a coworker is harassed. Love the food but demean the culture. Sacrifice my security for your safety at the ballot box. Oh yeah, he's yours. Focus on the flower while the plant thrives and ensure more poisonous blooms ahead. Until you dig into your roots, this will always be your orange agent of death, your murderous flower. Oh yeah, he's yours. Thank you. Grandma's Wolf Tale. When they come to feast, grind diamonds into your skin. Fill your blood and bile with venom. Soak your marrow in vinegar. Make them pay with every bite until their tongues are shredded, their organs twisted, their liquid pathways molten, their screams indistinguishable from yours. Their pleasure turned to revelations of mortality. When they come to feast, let them gorge on death. Future projections. Laughing, she watched life drain from his swinging, lifeless black body. Her future grandchild's cancer cure lost forever. Frightened by Skittles and iced tea, he murdered the cure for type 2 diabetes. Standing on the hood of the car, he killed the woman whose unconceived child would have brought peace to the Middle East. Nine spirits joined those already blowing the winds of change, tipping the balance of power toward justice. Frightened by the unsteady rocking of the boat, he killed his fellow passengers. The captains of industry drove on, laughing. Souls sold in exchange for safety brought white death to the ocean shore. What part of thou shalt not kill didn't you understand, asketh the Lord. Next up, Marianne Osborne.
I'll be reading an excerpt from my short story, The Crew, which eventually I hope to make into a series of novels. The crew. We moved to Seattle because of my visions. I started having them when I was 12, but I never told anyone. How do you explain to your parents that during last year's family road trip, you saw soldiers from the Revolutionary War walking along the interstate? Well, if I told my big brother Shante that I saw Frederick Douglass and John Brown talking in a park in downtown Detroit, he, Mr. Know-It-All, would remind me they died over 125 years ago. Why should anyone believe me? No one else saw what I saw, and the people in the visions took no notice of me. It was as if I didn't exist in their past or my present. At 13, I became so anxious and frightened that I could hardly sleep. My schoolwork and friendships suffered, leaving me lost and alone. Shante left for college to study science, which made me happy for him and sad for me at the same time. I tried to tell him about my visions, but I couldn't find the words. He trusted hard facts, and I had none. My 14th birthday rolled around, and it was just me and my parents celebrating dinner at my favorite downtown Detroit restaurant. When we got home, I put on my PJs and headed to the kitchen for a glass of water. I heard my parents talking about me from the hallway, and yeah, I eavesdropped. "You don't even like being near Mama Delia," Daddy said, snickering. "You got that right, Anthony," Mom laughed at first, but then her voice turned serious. "But something is going on with Shanice. I may not understand my mother's ways, but Mama will know what to do." The summer I turned 15, we loaded up the car and headed west. Leaving my past behind was hard, but I focused on making a fresh start. We drove through 9 states on our way to Seattle, and I had a vision in each one. By now, I was used to them. They didn't bother me, and I didn't bother them. At least, that's what I told myself. Crossing the bridge over the large lake, we approached a tunnel with a sign overhead that read, "Seattle, Portal to the Pacific." We drove into darkness. An apartment in the Central District was our new home. "Tomorrow I'm taking you to see Grandma Delia," Mama announced. "What's she like?" "Oh, you'll see what she's like. We moved here so you could be close to her," she said. "But it's too close for me," she muttered under her breath. The next day, my parents dropped me off at the front door of a small blue one-story home. They sped off, barely saying goodbye. A woman looking like an older version of my mom stood in the doorway. Grandma Cordelia, Delia for short, was slightly taller than me and just full of patterns. She wore a tie-dye shirt and a full-length skirt that was a patchwork of triangle shapes. Her perfectly shaped afro was shaved on one side and swept in an afro puff on the other. Her deep brown eyes studied me intensely, making me nervous. "Come in, Shanice," she said, guiding me to a chair in the living room. Despite her swirl of colors and designs, Grandma's voice was calming. We sat facing each other, and Grandma Delia got straight to the point. "You've been having visions, right?" "Well, who told you?" "Oh, your mama, of course," she replied matter-of-factly. "Now, about them visions, I have them too." I opened my mouth in surprise, struggling to speak, but Grandma Delia wasn't having that. "Close your mouth, Shanice, and only open it when you have something to say." Her sharp tongue clashed with the soothing tone of her voice, but I didn't mind. I had waited a long time to learn about my visions, so I kept silent and listened. We call the visions the truth because that's what they are. The truth skips around in our family, so your mama doesn't have it, but we do. Our family sees the truth through visions, seeing the past, the present, and the future, sometimes at the same time. There are kids out there who turn 15 just like you, learning their truth. You are not alone. "Sounds like you and your mom need to have a conversation," she said, standing up. She left the room and I sat there thinking, if Mama knew about the truth, then she knew about my visions. Why didn't she say something these past 3 years? Grandma Delia came back. "Try not to be mad at your mother. She wants quiet. And the truth is anything but that. It's a joy and it's a burden, and you'll find that some families use their truth for good, while others use their truth to do bad things. When I got home, my parents didn't ask me anything about meeting with my grandmother. Thank you. Next up is Kilam Tel Aviv.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kilam. This is my first year reading, and so I have one poem to share with you from the anthology, and it's entitled Politically Corrected Collection. This unity is as appetizing as petrified granola. Its texture is unyielding, steady in structure until its inevitable crack that compromises the integrity from the base and its appearance from the top. Flavorless, uniform, bland, perfectly angled narrative of health and benevolent intention. A utopia of promised purpose, difficult to be consumed and fearful to pass. Harsh molds liquidate character, easing digestion as the ice cream, cake, steak, fried and salted morsels of your life scatter across your consciousness, leaving you envious of a better bad over the bitter truths of this forced normalcy. Thank you. Next up, we have Minnie Collins.
Good evening, and thanks again, and waving out there. Hello, okay. I'm reading two poems from the collection of three. 45, you and me. It's not 45, it's us, allowing ourselves to be distracted, to be angry, to be afraid, even psychotic. It's not 45, it's me, monopolized by CNN, the thought police. It's Fox, devouring whatever to survive, aiming for the title, Ministry of Facts, of Truth. It's us, allowing media to provoke hatred, control selective entertainment disguised as news, infecting, destroying independent thought. Feeding excruciating yet mouth-watering pompous high metabolic propaganda. Indulging our minds with 1984 Orwell's fake news. Quibbling over fake news rather than the realities of poverty, homelessness, unemployment, immigration, DACA, your new King County taxes. Are we texting our Washington governor, representatives, local council members, future mayor, now mayor? Urban decay, floods, hurricanes, homelessness, it just keeps going on and on. But it's always that big blue screen that leaves us singing the blues and green with envy. We know that racism is alive and existed before 45. Racism now overtly permissible, now more visible, not covert. Media creates these teams that infect us on late night shows for comic relief. And so what are we going to do about it? Do you have palm power? Hold it up. Palm power. Everybody in here maybe has an iPhone. That's your power. Marvin Gaye sings, what's going on? What's going on? Sam Cooke says it's blowing in the wind. It's been a long time coming. It's loquacious, sagacious, infectious. New generations, multicultural, both local and global. Global, shaking shackles, self-educated beyond school board-approved textbooks and curriculum. We are masters of light speed with palm power. Two thumbs and a finger touch and a mouse help palm. We are masters of Facebook, hashtags, Instagram, YouTube, and any other thing you can think of, including the RC code apps. We are social media savvy, forging bonds, organizing, removing masks, ripping veils, boundaries, moving in concentrics. Change is here, moving on fiber optics, the speed of life. No more of that shoulda, coulda, woulda, ifa, hadda. We act, not react. We registered to vote to get those out. I did not like my candidate. That's why I didn't vote. It don't make no difference anyway. Articulate, not procrastinate. Advocate, agitate if necessary. Petition, not complain after decisions are made. Aerate and illuminate our minds from social media shackles. It's the monotone. It's not the way it used to be. We need to change palm power to reorganize, rewrite, re-educate, voting for new policies, laws, and politicians. Thank you.
My name is Jacqueline Ware, and I also go by Jay. I'll be reading a couple of pieces from the anthology. The first one is called The Heart of a Classic. No heart to kill a mockingbird unselfishly singing lullabies from his twig in the trees, no heart. To fear an invisible man desperately desiring to be accepted and free, no heart, no heart. No heart to slide down a rabbit hole, growing tall, shrinking small, or lord over flies, stranded on a deserted island, governed by a social ladder to control or fall. No heart. No heart for oil traveling the mighty sea, piercing Moby Dick with a whaler's hook, or break the silent night, cheers by 100 years of solitude in a magical book. No heart, no heart to stop. No heart to stop the sun from rising on a rickety raft floating down the Mississippi into a stream, carrying Tum and Huck, choosing to lay aside all pride and prejudice because they had a dream. Every sweet tooth loves a good cake from scratch, baked by a good cook. Trump dilliumptious. Trump has never baked a cake in his life or any other treat for someone else's delight. Fabrications and misinformations as sticky as condensed milk. A lumpy concoction of scandals and false truths, not a texture as smooth as silk. Grabbing, grabbing for miscellaneous products and utensils, a mischievous child, disregarding hard proven cooking facts, willing to stir together any hodgepodge of ingredients while putting on a self-assured act. Trump's menu of abuses and madness is Trump dilliumptious as he absentmindedly stirs the pot, deceptively seasoning the minds of the disenfranchised and poor, a disposable and nasty lot. pushing competition way out of the way, inviting and instigating a verbal brawl or an outright fight, firing disapproving hires banished from his presence and sight. Scorching Obama's recipe for affordable health care for all, determined his repeal and replacement dish would be served no matter who tried to stall, cracking eggs on the heads of leakers and disloyal staff, many of them secretly shouting, "Hallelujah, free at last!" Reckless, sifting classified and confidential documents all over the counter and floor like flour, contemplating where in Russia or Africa he plans to erect the next Trump Tower. Omitting sugar from the mix to trim unnecessary spending, focused on Twitter and whatever is popular and trending, believing baking powder is for missiles, rockets, firearms, not a darn cake. Trump proudly and triumphantly slides the pan into the easy bake oven, smoke pouring from the kitty stove, the black soot smudging the kitchen wall, tasteless and flat. Americans will be forced to eat it all. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Margaret Barry. I'm going to read about three poems for you from the anthology. First one, Father. He led her outside, all adorned, dressed in petticoats and outer coat too, white socks, black patent leather shoes. Offered her the shoreline after a rainfall, smell of fresh air and evergreens. Gaze in the sunny, wind-blown water like shimmered laced waves. Felt warmth of sun. He taught her silence, a quiet peace. A quiet peace in nature. Memorial. We came to your church for the eulogy, for the tributes, for the family, for communion. She loved and respected all. She adopted strangers from the street, some with addicts or addictions. She believed our better selves. The tributes were the absolute truth of her love to her faith. You, my dear Reverend, you did not honor her. You disrespected her. You said, "Repent, sinners." You said, "Before it's too late." You said, "Come and get saved." I respected you. I be silent. Being silent is how I be. Sometimes silence is resistance. You think you know me? You don't fucking know me. How dare you call me anything except my name? The last one, suicide. Irrevocable, no turning back. He said he'd do it, fell on deaf ears. We, silence, isolate, we can't appreciate. Now he's late. Thank you. Next is J. Gail Haynes.
Good evening. My name is Gail, and I will be reading my piece called Season to Rise. Seasons, times, dispensations of life. We are living in a world with chaos, turmoil, and strife. Blind hate has found a way into many lives. My skin color, not my heart or my mind, cause people to judge my ways and the future of my days? Deception. Deception, energy draining, layered with hate and lies. My prayer is that people will not only see, but open their spiritual eyes. My beautiful mahogany black brothers and sisters, I celebrate. My sweet cornbread brown people, yes, I can relate. I see the tears in your eyes in fear if your children will come home alive. I share the pain in your soul. The world can be mean, unloving, and cold. Let's embrace and remember our ancestors of times old, those who risked their lives, bled, fought, cried, and died, that we would come forth to stand and to rise. Be encouraged, my black brothers and sisters, and dry those weeping eyes. Put your hands on your hips, but don't let your backbone slide. If the power of your pain has caused you to fall, too weak to stand, and all you can do is crawl, crawl with dignity and crawl with pride. Stand up on the inside and rise above those lies. Rise with determination and rise above hate. Allow love to rise up in your heart, a victory to celebrate. All right. I'm going to read one more since the bell hasn't dinged yet. And this one is called Little Flower. Because at one point, I'll just briefly say that I was in a situation where I felt controlled and abused. I was once a little flower, crushed and trampled on the ground. I lived in sadness, my face in a frown. I cried to God, he said, no more. Your life, my child, I will restore. I'm sending the warmth of my sunshine. I'm sending the refreshing rain. I'm sending the breeze of the wind to wipe away all your pain. Open your petals and accept my love. The angels are smiling from heaven above. Now I can smile, laugh, sing, and dance. The sadness is gone and I'm free at last. He said, go out and look around. Seek other little crushed flowers all trampled on the ground. Share my sunshine and share my rain. Share the breeze that wiped away all your pain. And tell them I love them all the same. And then tell them they're free in Jesus' name. Amen. Next will be Gaylord Sisson.
Hello. My first poem, Firefly. The sound of your name is longer than the blink of light that's seen in the air as you fly and flutter over the grass in empty space. Blink, and your light is on, then off before it was on, it seems. Blink. Blink, blink, several in the air at once, here and there. Then blink, 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 and everywhere. All at once, or not blink. Easier seen in the daylight, easier seen as the daylight fades. It's almost dark. Twilight, firefly, blink. One month a year. It's black is beautiful month. Yeah. It's black is beautiful month. And I feel beautiful this month. Yesterday was past month. Tomorrow is any month. But today is black is beautiful month. If you look around yourself this month, you'll see the beauty of the month. But look quick, it only lasts a month. There were no beautiful blacks last month. And tomorrow will be the end of a beautiful month. But today, oh, what a beautiful month. Yesterday, I wasn't beautiful because I was black. Tomorrow, I won't be beautiful because I will be black. But today, beautiful is black. Today is black and beautiful month. This one I wrote during October, during trick-or-treat time. The title is A Devil's Dream. Destiny, kill your baby, for I had a dream of warning, a dream of him and thee and of untold mourning. The dream began as if I had awakened and could see death. Yet my eyes were closed. A road I was walking cluttered with a thorn rose. I was on a journey to nowhere where I had met a woman with child. She told me of a light, and together we walked a while. Many times the sun appeared, but his light was red like blood. The woman gave birth. The child had horns and wings of a dove. Its eyes were colored yellow. She called her man-child Beast. We became lost in the darkness, which to the child was food and feast. The darkness became perpetual until the beast uttered its first sound. The sound was my pain, and in a distance, a light was found. We raced to the light, the beast and I. The woman to the light cursed, and the light cried. I reached it first. A small candle, and with intent to protect, cuddled it to my bosom, but the light was not kept. Darkness once more prevailed. The beast was satisfied. I stood there with candle in hand, knowing death would no longer hide. Spirit. I hear what people say, and yet I don't believe any of it. I see what people do, and I believe only half of it. I speak of what I know, and I only know some of it. Camping at Big Sur. Sulfur, copper, swallowtail, honeybees, black flies, no clouds, only sun. Green leaves are yellow, inside the light, around the trees, on the ground, shadows. The art of peaceful listening. Children play basketball, twirl batons while laughing, fly on the playground swings, talk with words that prattle the mind and are quickly forgotten. Peaceful listening, while birds chirp. I wonder if someone else is capable of hearing a butterfly's footsteps as it gingerly crosses a window screen. Thank you. And I promised myself not to forget to introduce my good friend, Helen Collier.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm going to read you an excerpt from Miss Anna, Promise Keeper, which should be out in about a month. Am I not loud enough? Raymond Fallon, a white Southerner, was raised in Philadelphia. He learned of the South he didn't know when he stumbled upon a letter written to his grandfather from his mother, both long ago deceased. I left there with my mind in a rage, but I needed answers to questions I had avoided for too many years. I flew to Philadelphia and then to my grandfather's estate to find those answers. I unlocked the door to my grandfather's study, something I had avoided since his death. I discovered that for 70 years, one Southern white man a year had died, in that stake pit. Soon after that, I discovered the letter written to him from my mother. October 6, 1944. Nothing prepared me for this land, Father, that I have come to. I must admit, the horrors you told me of fell on deaf ears. I could not imagine humans with minds this sick. The colored people who live here, yes, Father, they are as you warned me they would be. The white man's seeds are everywhere. No two look the same, and their colors vary to every degree because of how the white men use the bodies of the colored females. He has carelessly given away the most important part of himself to those he claimed to detest. Many, Father, lay dying when health care is right up the street, with white-only signs forbidding them the care they need to live. They have no way of bettering their lot in life, for to do so would mean they are trying to be better than the whites whose power they live under, something that would cause their efforts to be destroyed and their lives lost. They live like lambs in a land of wolves without a shepherd. I see no hope for them, Father. I see less hope for us. It is as though Southern white people are still fighting the Civil War through the lives of these helpless colored people and have deemed them to be punished for their losses, just as your father deemed the losses, the deaths of the Southern white man because of the deaths of your great uncles and great grandfather who died fighting the Civil War. Father, generations from now, our children and grandchildren will have to face the truth of these evil deeds that will shame them. We who live in the North are allowing these horrors to continue as though we're not responsible. Life has a way of catching you when you least expect it. If not you, it will find those you love and come back to haunt their lives or the lives of their loved ones. For that reason, Father, I am using my personal inheritance to provide the best care for them that I can. I hope to have children one day who will live in this world we have created. I do not want them to believe I allowed these atrocities without trying to change things. Though my husband is honest and fair, there is nothing he can do to change the sickness in the hearts of the people who are ensuring these laws stay in place. They have no idea they're sick, making it impossible for them to get the help they need. Thank you, Father, for teaching me how I must live. Your daughter, Rath. Thank you.
Okay, so we have one more reader from the anthology, and that is Santiago Vega, who, while he's getting ready to come up and read for us, I just wanted to remind you that we do have copies of the book in the back. They are $20 a piece, and they are brand new works by many of our writers. So these are just some of the writers who are in the book. There are actually more. And I feel like I should read something from Georgia. Y'all think I should do that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'll do that. We'll bring her into the space, right? And, you know, I'm not Georgia. We all know that? Oh. Yep, apparently we all know I'm not Georgia. Okay. I've got people. I've got people. I've always had people, not always where I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, or the number I wanted, but I've always had people. And I've always known I have people. People have always provided enough for me to get safely from one point to another. My mother, a sibling, an aunt, a teacher, a classmate, a church member, a colleague, a student, a stranger. Because I've always had people, I try not to condemn others because they may not have had people or the right people or the right number of people at the right time. I'm grateful I've had people. I'm grateful that I could be people for others. And Georgia is always people for us. So now let's invite up to the podium Mr. Santiago Vega.
All these short people in my group. Okay, this is an imaginary entry in anthology. This poem was born probably 2 years ago, the seed, because I was at Martin Luther King Community Center, and I was with a bunch of artists and activists, and they were talking about like the protests that were going around about the juvenile hall, and this striking fact came out. In the summer 2016, at one period in juvenile hall detention, there were no white kids. Zero. And Seattle, I don't know what percentage it is of white, but it's majority white. There were zero white kids. And so most of this past year I've been writing songs, but it came to me as a song, but I'm going to sing the first, stanza, and then the rest of it's going to be like a poem. But it repeats, so. There were no white boys in juvenile hall, there were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall, there were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall, there were no white boys. There were no white boys, no none at all, there were no white boy. Little Johnny's bedroom's full of dynamite, and little Jimmy's a neo-Nazi, so-called alt-right. The Billy Bob Quartet stole $300,000 worth of computers. And Mikey treats girls like they work in Hooters. Bryce is 17 with a DUI. And Donnie tortures animals till they die. And little Polly harasses the Spanish teacher and calls her an illegal bitch. And little Brucie plots days when he can detonate the switch so he can blow up all the niggers, queers, and illegals too. 'Cause these are the things that innocent, adolescent white boys do. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys, no none at all. There were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. Tommy looks like Skeletor, like warmed over death, 'cause he and his crew are cooking and selling meth. And Tommy looks like he's paying the wages of sin, 'cause his stupid parents and greedy doctors have him on Ritalin. And Scotty steals all that he can with myopic greed, 'cause he follows the whitest president since Andrew Jackson's lead. And Saul jacks iPhones and resells them online, 'cause he'll grow out of it. He'll be just fine. Yes, these perfect little white boys, these perfect little teens, would never plot massacres, Columbine High School, churches massacres, or elementary school blow-ups into smithereens. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys, no none at all. There were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. Meanwhile, in Texas, Ahmed Muhammad is arrested for bringing a clock to school. In a land where the most decrepit, bland, and untalented rule. Gold pick cotton is what two middle-aged schoolgirls in Arlington, Washington were told. Yes, you were enslaved. Yes, you were sold. And once three girls were suspended from Franklin High School in Seattle for wearing Afro hair. In the land of the free and the so fair. And just a few years ago, I met a white boy from Bellevue who put himself through college by selling weed. Whilst those brown boys corralled in juvenile hall might never be freed from a system that eviscerates them for doing 5% of what white boys do. From a system that, like an E. coli bacterium, can only to itself be true. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys, no none at all. There were no white boys. There were no white boys in juvenile hall. There were no white boys. There were no white boys, no none at all. There were no white boys. There it is. Gracias.
Thanks for streaming this extra episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Seattle's African American Writers Alliance held this reading at the Elliott Bay Book Company on February 24th. Thanks to Sonia Harris for our recording. Tune in again soon.